This is the State Capitol Report on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We'll talk this hour about state politics and bring you up to date on what our state government leaders are up to. We will welcome your thoughts and questions as well as we talk with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter, who joins us in the studio. Good morning, Sean.
Morning, Joy.
It was a fairly busy week last week with, lots of stuff happening. We have a new railroad commissioner, the state Supreme Court reprimanded one of its own, the many other things. The state assembly did get together to try to override some of Governor Doyle's partial vetoes of the budget repair bill, but did not succeed.
And that wasn't too big a surprise. You need a two-thirds vote in the assembly. Well, you need a two-thirds vote in each house of the legislature to override a governor's veto, which is why it really never happens. Last time it happened was back in 1985. But the assembly wanted to try it on a few of the governor's vetoes. And what they did is, in the budget that they handed the legislature, the Senate and assembly, they said in there, Governor, make some cuts, but don't make them in these areas. And a few that they listed were senior care, public education, and transportation. And the governor, using his still very powerful veto pen, crossed that out so that he would have the ability to make cuts as he pleased. And he also decided to make more cuts than the assembly and Senate voted on, $270 million worth across all agencies. And so basically the assembly was coming in to say, okay, we're going to override you here, Governor. And on three votes, if they were successful, they would have blocked the governor from moving money out of education, out of senior care, and out of transportation. And you had Representative Kitty Rhodes of Hudson talking about why that is a good idea.
This way we make sure we still reduce the state spending, but we make it very clear. You do not go to K-12, you do not go to senior care, and you stay out of transportation. Do not take it for granted. The legislature should and has the responsibility to play an active role in declaring what our priorities are for funding.
So, we mentioned this fail. Mm-hmm. It was no surprise it was going to fail, you needed 66 votes for this if everybody was there. Republicans only control 52 votes. That means they need a bunch of Democrats to go along. And it's just not likely to get that many Democrats to go along to override their own governor. And so Assembly Minority Leader Jim Cruiser basically said that, that they were taking a political vote there, that Republicans were doing this to get votes on the records of Assembly Democrats who have to run for re-election this year, and that this is the same type of politics he's seen around the building for a long time.
Some of the old games remain the same. I guess we squandered about 16 months of the session, which we met 25 times, so now it's time to pad the campaign book. Get some gotcha votes, and that's just what these are.
So, and they are potentially gotcha votes, where if you don't vote to override the governor on these and you're a freshman Democrat in a contested seat, somebody can run an ad against you or say that you didn't want to protect education or senior care, regardless of the circumstances. So I guess they're both a little bit right on this one.
Yeah, and Jim Cruiser can vote his conscience because he's not going to run again anyway.
That was one of his last floor speeches there. Mm-hmm. Jim Cruiser is going to be the Kenosha County Executive. So we don't know who the Democratic leader in the assembly is going to be next year, and they hope whoever it is going to be the speaker.
Yeah. Other news last week came when a couple of different independent analyses of Census Bureau data came up with the news that Wisconsin has dropped out of the top 10 highest tax states in the nation. And I know that that's something that has been the first time in a very, very long time that Wisconsin is not in the top 10. How's the Capitol reacting to that?
They're happy. I mean, everybody wants to claim credit for it, I guess, is the thing. Speaker Hipsch put out a release and trumpeted this. He talked about it on the assembly floor as what a good thing this is. And this is why, we need to stand up to tax increases. It doesn't even take into account this past budget and any tax increases that were in this budget. It goes back to 2006. And, even though your taxes went up a little bit, property taxes on average went up around the state, other states' taxes went up faster So, you know, by their tax burden going up, we dropped down to number 11. And it's significant because it's the first time since 1980 that Wisconsin's been out of the top 10 tax states when you look at state and local taxes as a percentage of income. And even that 1980 drop was, that was an anomaly. Aside from that brief period, it went back to 1969 when Wisconsin was out of the top 10.
Yeah. Sean, throwing you a little bit of a curveball here, but didn't I hear in the news last week that state workers are not going to get a 2% raise, but instead are going to get a 1% raise as a way to save some money?
Yeah, that was something negotiated by Ask Me and some of the other state employee unions. Where instead of getting you know, a 2% retroactive raise and then another 2% and then a 1%, they decided to go basically juxtapose the 1% and the 2%. So they take the smaller raise up front, and that saves the state about $25 million. It's something that they negotiated.
Okay.
It's far less popular with, you know, for example, university workers who can't you know, collectively bargain, and saw the state decide to, you know, do the same thing with their raises that they were expecting coming that time.
Yeah, and in the spirit of full disclosure,
yes, absolutely.
Sean and I are both university workers who are subject to that that particular decision. We're going to talk more state politics with Sean Johnson during this, our State Capitol Report, the hour that we set aside every week to talk about the latest news coming from under the State Capitol Dome. And after the break, we'll talk about a couple of other news items from state politics from last week, including the reprimand of a state Supreme Court justice and a new railroad commissioner. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Our numbers, if you'd like to join in with thoughts or reactions to this news, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, 18 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, June the 2nd. This is our State Capitol Report, talking with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter. For the rest of this half hour, we will welcome in a professor of education after our 7:30 news to talk about the latest test scores from Wisconsin public school students and what that says and how we might close the achievement gap in Wisconsin. That's coming up after 7:30. Sean, last week we saw the state Supreme Court reprimanding its one of its newest members, Annette Ziegler. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's the first time that they've done it to a sitting Supreme Court justice, and this dealt with cases that she handled when she was a Washington County judge. Involving a bank in which her husband is on the board of directors. There were a dozen cases where an investigation found that she should have declared a conflict of interest in those cases. She did not. And so this has been a lengthy process of, you know, what to do next. And it really, the ultimate decision fell down to her colleagues in the state Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. They decided to go with a public reprimand, which, as we mentioned, has never been done before. On the other hand, it's the lightest of the different penalties that she could have received. She could have been suspended, or she could have been removed from the bench.
Mm-hmm.
If you talk to people in the legal community, it seems like everybody that I read or heard said that, look, this is a big deal. It's never happened before. And just an example from a story by a colleague, Gil Halstead, he talked to former Supreme Court Justice Jeanine Geske.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry about that.
Oh, that's all right. Hold on a second.
Here she is.
There isn't a judge in the state that's not going to look closely at these decisions and perhaps make some judges a bit more diligent than they've been in the past, you know, screening the cases and making sure that they're abiding by the code. So this kind of decision has that impact.
But the group that really threw up a red flag about these cases is Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, one of the groups that flew up a red flag. And Director Mike McCabe was basically not happy with this, calling it, what amounts to a slap on the wrist.
This is going to be widely seen as a slap on the wrist, as sort of a note in your personnel file that I don't think is going to do much to remove the cloud that's hovering over the Supreme Court. They're operating under pretty heavy cloud cover, and I don't think this is going to make those clouds go away.
In fact, there was a lot of talk about changing the way we elect or select Supreme Court justices during the past several weeks. Did anything happen with that during this special session?
No, if you want to change that, I mean, that's a pretty big deal. You'd have to amend the Constitution if you wanted to start appointing justices. Any constitutional amendment is not an easy thing to have happen. You have to pass it through two consecutive sessions of the legislature, then have the public go along, and basically you're asking people to vote to take their vote away. And whether or not it's a good idea, I make no arguments on either side of that. It's just you have quite a case to make there.
Yeah, but what about public financing of Supreme Court justices' campaigns?
That's something that passed the Senate this year, and mm-hmm. It seems like Senate Democrats are on board with that. It was basically bottled up in the Assembly and never given a chance to come out of committee or get a vote on the full floor.
Yeah, I saw that Jay Heck of Wisconsin Common Cause sent out a news release last week very upset with the state legislature for quietly adjourning the special session and not taking up campaign finance reform.
It was quiet, and that I don't know if you remember, I mean, it's a ways back, but the governor actually called a special session on campaign finance mm-hmm. reform, and it just shows you how meaningless special sessions can be. Where the governor says we're in special session, it's basically just lays the framework for if lawmakers can agree on campaign finance bills, they can come in and pass something under this special session. But it's really just a skeletal framework. They never met. They would come in at the beginning of regular session and basically keep that special session alive, just kind of floating along for months, and then quietly adjourn it in May. It was really remarkable how you heard not only, nothing from this, from Assembly Republicans who are leaders, at least, or philosophically opposed to this idea. You didn't hear anything in the Senate either. And you really didn't hear the governor talk about it either. And he's the one who called the special session. So, it was sort of one of those it seems like in retrospect to sort of placate the groups that were calling for it, like Common Cause. And, mm-hmm. Now it's too late for anything like that this year.
Here's a story that really intrigued me anyway, because I see all sorts of implications here. The state's railroad commissioner, who was, appointed by Tommy Thompson 100 years ago, Rodney Cronin, is out, uh-huh. and Roger Bresky is in. How did this happen?
Rodney Cronin's term was up, and in a way, he was sort of on borrowed time here, because the governor, it was up to him to make an appointment to this spot. He did, but it sort of caught everybody by surprise that it was Roger Bresky, a Democratic state senator.
Mm-hmm.
Not only a Democratic state senator, but one who often doesn't share the governor's views. Mm-hmm. For example, this past session, the governor's top priorities was this smoking ban. I'd say Roger Bresky probably did as much or, more to kill that smoking ban this session than anyone. He just, he was worried that was going to hurt taverns up in his northern Wisconsin district, and he didn't want anything to do with it if it didn't have a lengthy phase-in period. So not only does he differ with the governor here, but he's in a contested seat, and he's done very well there. I mean, he's been elected mm-hmm. for 18 years, so the people up in Roger Bresky's district like him. But it's still a contested seat. You look at the assembly representatives from that area, they're all Republicans, so it can go to either party. He's had a well-funded challenger last time. It was likely to have a well-funded challenger again. And so in a year when Democratic senators are trying to not only hold on to their margin there, but pick up a couple seats, now they have this seat to defend without an incumbent in it, which is a lot harder.
Yeah. Roger Bresky, though, does have some experience in his background that would serve him well as railroad commissioner. This wasn't just, let's get an opponent of the smoking ban out of the state legislature and protect his seat for Democrats, is it?
Well, he served on the Senate Rail Committee. He noted he has some experience in there, but you have to, I think you should look at it with a critical eye and mm-hmm. know that Governor Doyle has had his differences with the Democratic-controlled Senate under Majority Leader Russ Decker, and that mm-hmm. Bresky was a staunch Decker ally. and that the person that Doyle's people recruited to fill this seat before it was even open, announced that it was going to be open, is Jim Holprin. Jim Holprin used to serve up in an assembly district up there.
Right.
He was Governor Doyle's tourism secretary. I mean, this is...
And so now he's going to run for Bresky's seat.
He's going to run for Bresky's seat. And, okay. I mean, basically, he was ready to make the announcement before, you know, before the news hit for the rest of us. And just to give you an example, in talking to Holprin, not this past week, week before, I think, about whether the smoking ban would be an issue this campaign. He says he doesn't think it's going to be. He wants to talk about other issues, but you can just listen to what he has to say about it.
It is conceded that there will be a smoking ban in the 2009 legislative session. I will vote for that smoking ban. And there may be some details in that bill regarding coverage, regarding timelines for implementation, and certainly those will need to be considered. But overall, the legislature will approve a smoking ban next time, and I'll vote for it.
So, I mean, just an example. He's a different kind of candidate, at least on this issue, than Roger Bresky.
Yeah. So, and that particular Senate seat isn't the only seat up for grabs in the state legislature. There's a number of open seats around the state right now.
Yeah, and in the Senate in particular, there's a few contested seats. And Carol Ressler also stepped down. She's a longtime Republican state senator from Oshkosh, so that may make that a more contested district. All eyes are kind of on the assembly at this point because there's a possibility, since Democrats only need to pick up a few seats, they feel like this is a Democratic year still and that they're going to have a good one.
Let me ask you, Sean, about an item that made news on Friday afternoon when a judge upheld the state's constitutional ban on gay marriage. A Dane County judge dismissed a lawsuit that was brought by a University of Wisconsin Oshkosh political science instructor saying that the question that was put on the ballot was illegal because it put two issues to voters instead of one. In our final minute, what do you expect to happen with this particular issue, the gay marriage ban and this challenge?
Well, the gentleman who brought the suit said his instinct was to appeal the decision. And his basic dispute was that this was two questions, one addressing gay marriage and the other similar legal relationships or civil unions, and that it should have been voted on in two separate questions, and it wasn't. The court said they were basically, it was two sides of the same coin that I read.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll see what happens next. It's really up to the gentleman who brought the suit.
Yeah, there might be an appeal. So, and finally, less than 30 seconds, no big news here, but the governor did sign the Great Lakes Compact officially last week.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about this is he signs this historic agreement, and then you had Mayor Daley in Chicago taking a dig at Wisconsin for being late and coming around, saying, you know, oh, thank goodness they finally realized where the Great Lakes is. So,
well, all right, Mayor Daley, that's round one. I'm sure there'll be more.
He's known to sort of run his mouth.
Thanks a lot, Sean. Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter. And we'll talk about test scores coming up after this check of the latest news. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you with us on this Monday, June the 2nd. And in this segment of our state capitol report, we'll take a focus on education and the test scores that were just released on Friday. Wisconsin school children scored about the same on statewide tests in reading and math this year. Results released on Friday showed that reading scores for elementary, middle, and high school grades all remained unchanged this year compared to last. Math scores increased 1 point in the elementary grades, dropped 1 point in middle grades, and dropped 2 points in 10th grade. State Superintendent Elizabeth Burmaster says there are some positive trends, but the focus must remain on closing the achievement gaps. While the gap between minority students and whites narrowed in many groups over the past 3 years, it still remains significant. We're going to talk about these test scores and how to narrow the achievement gap and how to especially improve the test scores in Milwaukee. There is a big gap between the rest of the state and Milwaukee as well in these test scores. And we welcome your thoughts and questions for our guest, Steve Correa, Associate Professor of Education at St. Norbert College in De Pere, who joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being with us.
Oh, very happy to.
So are these is this good news or bad news? I don't know.
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. I think a lot of people would say, well, Wisconsin, we're holding our own. Mm-hmm. Overall performance in the state is consistent and not terrifically different than it's been in the last 5 years. The downside to this, and of course there's always a downside, is on the one hand, we do have an achievement gap that exists. Now, research has always shown that this gap has existed for a long time between people of higher social economic status and lower, and especially among African-Americans and whites and Hispanics and these groups, that disparity has always existed. But the achievement gap is there. This test really shines a spotlight on that achievement gap. It's narrowing, but it's still evident. The other side of this, which is very significant for the state, is that by the standards established in No Child Left Behind, by the year 2014, if this act is reauthorized in its present state, would mean that 100%, yes, 100% mm-hmm. of Wisconsin students have to be proficient or better. And, of course, that's just frankly absurd that that is going to happen. But the reality of it is, if it is reauthorized, the present performance will result in many, if not all, almost all Wisconsin schools being labeled as failing with that horrible designation that No Child Left Behind chooses to use. And so, you know, holding our own is really not good enough under the present way that No Child Left Behind is formulated and enforced.
Yeah. Well, if whether or not you agree with the standards of No Child Left Behind, isn't that kind of scary that all of Wisconsin schools would be failing under those guidelines?
Well, and again, I think that proponents of No Child Left Behind would say, hey, you finally get it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we want. We're not accepting excuses. I think our president used the term whiners in a speech in Detroit when people were trying to bring to mind some of the deficiencies of No Child Left Behind. But the president and supporters have said, no, this is the idea. We don't accept excuses. We need to have these performances. These children are being shortchanged. And certainly, a lot of these students, children, are being shortchanged. This test shines that spotlight on it, as I said before. But the idea is, boy, by 2014, you're supposed to do it all. And again, the proponents of No Child Left Behind say, yes, that's what we want.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality of that is going to be quite different. It just simply is not going to happen with 100% compliance in just 6 short years.
Another highlight of the state education test scores released on Friday showed that there is still quite a gap between Milwaukee's scores and the state average, Milwaukee scoring well below the state average. That is no surprise to you?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that probably is a better bet than going with Big Brown this week in Preakness.
Okay.
That is very dependable. In doing some reading on this, the Marathon School District in Wausau, they have 96% of their students that scored proficient or above. However, they average less than 300 students per grade level. So they can target performance.
Yeah, because they're such a little school.
Exactly. Yeah. And so when you're dealing, now, not that a large district has automatic handicaps, but they have challenges that smaller districts don't have. And they also, of course, do not have the huge economic and spread of people within that district. But Milwaukee has serious issues. And, of course, there was a study a few months back talked about dropout rates. And Milwaukee was one of, I believe, the 10 largest urban areas that have extreme dropout rates, frankly, you know, over 40% among some groups. And you know, these are significant issues. So, again, this test highlights those, but they've always existed. I think Milwaukee has a number of programs in mind to implement it to be able to address these issues, but it's so much more complex in that large urban district. And If anybody has looked at the DPI website, something I found interesting was after they have the scores posted, immediately below it, the State Department, Public Instruction Department, decided to put a graph showing the increase in poverty rates among Wisconsin students. Now, it's significant. In the last 5 years, the number of students living in poverty in the state of Wisconsin, within schools, that's defined as getting free and reduced lunches, has increased over 20%. So that has a significant impact on the performance of anybody. And I think people that were living on the edge before are finding themselves, with increasing food costs and other issues, increasingly challenged. And DPI highlighted that to show some of the challenges that are having an impact on standardized test performance in the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah. And in fact, in the Madison School District, there have been some eyebrows raised because while Madison is proud of its public education system here, it's scored, Madison students scored below the state average on a number of these factors. I think their math scores were up slightly, but everything else scored below state averages. And Madison district officials were pointing to poverty rates or non-English speaking populations and the growth of that in the Madison School District.
Absolutely. And of course, Madison has a new superintendent coming in, Dan Nierad from the Green Bay School District, so a district not unfamiliar with some of these same challenges. Madison is larger, we all know that. But, you know, so they're looking at a change of leadership, perhaps, to be able to address some of these issues. But, again, they're trying to find out, we always know about correlation, that there's a correlation between these kind of economic challenges and students that move and students that don't speak English as a primary language. To directly tease out that this is the cause of that is, again, No Child Left Behind says, we don't care. This is the point. But other people are trying to say, let's be reasoned in this. Let's look at what we're doing. And again, Madison points that out. You know, it's a much more of a transient school district than people perhaps might be aware of with populations. And of course, the language issues and other economic issues. So yes, the urban districts, which Wisconsin really only has one, but Madison's pretty darn close, they have significant challenges, again, that Marathon, a wonderful school district, just do not have.
Yeah. So what do you expect the DPI to do with these latest test results?
Well, I think in the short run, the DPI will probably be collecting their breath after getting all of this information out. It's quite an undertaking. Secondly, I know that a lot of teachers feel somewhat frustrated because these tests are often released this time of year. And so when they're looking at making challenges or making changes in their district, they're not exactly, or their classrooms, they're not exactly able to. Of course, the point of this is to look at programs and performance over time. So I think on the one hand, DPI will probably be hoping that the reauthorization of No Child Left Behind really scales back that 100% compliance. And certainly the political climate, I don't see any way that is going to continue to be implemented in the way that we think. DPI itself, though, they certainly say a lot about closing the achievement gap. But when you look through their site and you try to find specific information and look at aggressive programs to target that, there's not a lot there. And so certainly this is where a lot of districts are trying to develop their own programs. And MPS is doing that. They're looking Milwaukee. They're looking at consistent teaching techniques, proven techniques. Of course, there's problems with No Child Left Behind and the reading program with what's proven, because what they were supporting was not actually supported by research. But the Milwaukee district is looking at doing things with attendance and school nutrition programs and helping to have these students connect to career academies and any number of ways to engage them actively in their learning. Again, large district, it's quite a challenge to do.
We'll talk more about how to narrow the achievement gap in Wisconsin. 1-800-642-1234 is our toll-free number if you have an idea or a question for our guest about these latest test scores released on Friday, showing that Wisconsin school children scoring about the same on statewide tests in reading and math this year as last year, but that and there has been some progress in closing the achievement gap, but much more needs to be done. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. 12 minutes before 8 o'clock on this Monday, June the 2nd. Coming up after the news, I'll welcome in the director of Wisconsin Public Radio, Phil Corvo, on this, the first Monday of the month. We'll hear some news about Wisconsin Public Radio and take your questions and feedback about Wisconsin Public Radio in our next hour. Right now, we are talking about test scores and education in Wisconsin and narrowing the achievement gap and No Child Left Behind. Our guest, Steve Correa, Associate Professor of Education at St. Norbert College in De Pere. And our first caller is Harry in Madison. Hi, Harry. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. I want to make a number of statements.
We don't have time for a lot, though.
I've been in this system for about 40 years. I've taught for about 12 years. And I've earned 5 degrees in this state. And we're not attacking the problem at the right place. The way to deal with this situation hasn't changed in 40 years. What we have to do is to educate the mothers. I could read before I went to school. Okay? The other question is, there's a certain number of the children who are depressing the achievement of the other children. If you can read or you can write, they laugh at you. I've been in classes in which kids say to me, you're too bright to be in this class. I've been in classes in which the teachers say to me, what are you doing in my class? Okay, the teachers are being hamstrung by a system that doesn't allow them to innovate.
All right. Well, how about that point first, Professor Correa?
Well, there's not necessarily a lot to argue with there. I that's the one reason for the increasing popularity of the four-year-old kindergarten when we look at that early area. And again, the idea is to be able to have students academically ready for school so that, boy, you know, when I was in kindergarten, I was still learning my colors, which I still get confused on occasion. And we look at now we have students regularly reading. A reading kindergartner does not draw any attention. Necessarily. Certainly, with some of the issues going on with the test scores in the Racine Unified School District, boy, reading some of the comments on the blogs there about families and looking at those issues. And again, we're talking about readiness for school and a culture of academic achievement. And again, that's what we strive for. When we're looking at issues of limited English proficiency and, frankly, children living in poverty, everybody remember Maslow's needs hierarchy.
Yeah.
We're at those basic needs of food, safety, and shelter in some places. And again, those places that don't have that, boy, it's a challenge. Now, the Wanakee School District, I noticed, performed the highest in Dane County area. And again, you look at the socioeconomic status of that school district and compare that with Madison, where about 43% of the students are at free and reduced lunches. You know, it's a very different dynamic. So certainly, again, those issues are larger in larger districts, the challenges.
Harry was saying, you know, hey, this, you know, I've been around a long time and in the system a long time. This hasn't changed in 40 years. We've always had this problem. It's worse now, isn't it?
Evidence shows that clearly. Certainly we have more students in poverty. By the way, we're also better at measuring this and being aware of this, but we have more people pushed closer to the edge or over the edge than we've had before. And we have more issues of dropouts, and those kind of things are increasing. There's more social and economic pressures. And we also have a higher number, dramatically higher number of limited English proficiency students. And No Child Left Behind does not allow any accommodation for those students. So if you arrive yesterday, you're taking the test today, regardless of your English speaking skills. So, I would say that challenges have increased. Some of the issues have always existed, but the challenges have increased.
Yeah. Thank you, Harry, for the call. We have other callers, and you can join in as well, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison 263-1890, or send an email, talk@wpr.org. If you have a question or a comment on what we're learning from this latest round of statewide tests in reading and math. Jim in Brookfield, hi, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joy. I'm actually not from Brookfield, but a very similar school district. I'm working with the principal on a situation. I don't want to call out where he's from, but the situation is my daughter was in an English literature class. She was a junior, and she was it was advanced literature, and she was doing very well on the test, but had a couple assignments that she had missed, and wasn't achieving the overall grade level that the teacher was looking for. So halfway through the semester, the teacher forced her out of the class and forced her into honors. And, I think that what we're seeing is teachers are also looking at the overall GPA for their grades, and they're saying, these kids are not going to, they're dragging down my grade, and therefore I'm going to push them into a lower class level, and I'm not going to work with them. Yeah. So I've got another situation.
Well, I'm sorry, what about that, Professor Correa?
Well, that sounds more like a civil rights issue,
yeah.
Quite frankly. And obviously, as a parent, he's to be very commended for being so involved in his child's education and that he's trying to reach a resolution to that. I think that what a lot of districts have begun to do is they have found that the KCE results are not helpful to them. So there's been a whole industry that's popped up called MAP testing, Measures of Academic Progress, which is a private vendor that they provide standardized test results for students, and then that district can look at that student's scores on math performance, and then if it's computation or what it is, and then they can target an academic curriculum for them. So districts are doing things, and I know the Wrightstown area district in northeastern Wisconsin has been involved in that, and that MAP testing. So this particular case, this sounds like though this is a slightly different issue. The teachers, I don't know, if this is this can't be tied to compensation, but certainly those challenges are there. But obviously, this parent is involved and knows what's going on. So, well, good for him.
Good for you, Jim. Thanks a lot. Darlene in Green Bay. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I'd just like to ask a quick question. We know we have an achievement gap, but my question is, don't we also have a spending gap? Aren't we spending more in schools like Wauwatosa and more affluent schools than we are in schools like Milwaukee? I'm talking about per-pupil spending. I'm guessing that the per-pupil spending in more affluent districts is greater than the per-pupil spending in those districts which are not so affluent.
Yeah, and I'm wondering how that correlates with the test scores, too, Professor Correa. Do you know?
Well, I think that per-pupil spending is a measure, but I would be very careful with whether to say, and you'll find no one that will say it is the measure to be able to do. Certainly, Milwaukee has other challenges. They have infrastructure. They have transportation costs. They have, more students, those kind of things to be able to look at. And there's not necessarily an economy of scale that goes on. So a smaller district can actually spend less per pupil and outperform, again, because they don't have those other built-in fixed costs to be able to do that. So it is a measure. But certainly districts like Whitefish Bay, Kohler, although, would be one that streaks very high, but those people accept those costs because of the uniqueness of that school district. There is a relationship, but it's one that's very difficult to tease out. So again, putting money into it doesn't guarantee you a solution, but certainly there has to be a certain amount to be able to provide those basic services.
Yeah. We only have about a minute or so to go, so what's the first step toward trying to improve the achievement gap in Wisconsin?
Well, and again, this is, I think, something in No Child Left Behind that deserves to have some applause. No Child Left Behind has a provision in it for all teachers to be highly qualified.
Mm-hmm.
As silly as it sounds, We have a lot of people out there teaching in areas that they are not certified or, frankly, academic qualified to be able to teach in. That number has decreased dramatically. Research does show, though, for example, math, students do better in math from teachers that have a math major, minor, or are certified in it, as simple as that sounds. However, people teaching math, they're very difficult to be found. The same in science, languages, reading, those kind of things. So I think districts, and Milwaukee is trying to do this, to be able to recruit and hire and have in place more highly qualified teachers. And No Child Left Behind has tried this. I think we're looking at the fourth grade kindergarten. I think we're looking at school nutrition programs.
Mm-hmm.
I think, again, those forward-thinking administrators are looking at this as a program and not a particular magic bullet.
As always, Professor Correa, we thank you for your time.
Oh, very glad. You're very welcome.
Steve Correa, Associate Professor of Education at St. Norbert College in De Pere. Thanks to Cynthia Schuster and Cheryl Gasser for producing this program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.